And we can't really talk about waders without understanding mud, glorious mud, can we?
It is all about mud for a lot of the waders. Yeah, they probe into the sediment. They are picking flies off the top. It is very important. It's why the wash can hold several hundred thousand sort of birds at any time, especially in the autumn and winter.
And trudging through the mud in our Wellingtons, it doesn't look particularly nutritious to me, I have to say.
The prey, the worms, what these birds are feeding on, the invertebrates, they're small. They're never going to form a meal for you and I. Maybe the oyster catchers catching a few mussels, they would still have to do that a bit. But they find plenty. But yes, it is very, very small prey.
And is there really nowhere for them between the Arctic and the Wash?
They will make a few stopovers in various places. Some of the birds will stage off in Iceland, in Northern Europe, further north in the UK, but there are some very, very long migration strategies and journeys done by some of our species of waders. I think there was a record from last year of a bar-tailed godwit. So this is a large wader with long legs that did a 17,000 kilometre journey non-stop.
17,000
kilometres. So it was Arctic to Australia. So this is on the East Atlantic flyway.
Whoa. Bird must have been
East,
tagged.
Let me put myself right. The East Asian flyway. Sorry.
This bird was tagged.
It was. It was a satellite tracked bird, so that we can actually determine where the bird is going, and precisely get plots from that at certain times as to where it was and how that was achieved. And remarkable.
Absolutely.
There's still lots and lots about movements of birds, how they breed, we do not know yet.
Right. Now, I think most people, when they think of an iconic bird for North, particularly North Norfolk, would think of the pink-footed geese and the spectacle of those migrating in their thousands over the Norfolk coast. But you also have a summer spectacle of waders, I understand.
Yeah, so we get the knot coming in, and really they're here until very early sort of March in numbers, and are fairly quick to return, even in sort of July, August. So at times 100,000 knots can be seen in one or two flocks, doing these spectacular fly rounds over the wash. I'm reluctant to call them murmurations, because murmurations really should be just for starlings. These gatherings of knot. Huge flocks where they change colour depending on whether the birds are showing their underside or their topside in the light. So a lot of these birds, they've just bred, as we said, up in the Arctic. They're heading back. They're coming back with lots of young ones amongst them. But 100,000 birds roosting at Snesham. So they're feeding on the wash, on this very food-rich mud. Mm-hmm. When we get a high tide, that mud gets covered. The birds have to go somewhere. Okay, so they need to have a bit of a rest period. So the lagoons that are part of our reserve at Snettisham, They're a safe haven. We have open shingle banks, we have shingle covered islands in the reserve there, and the knot can get up en masse and down into those gravel pits, where they are then safe while the tide is high, so it's covering the mud. Once that tide then recedes, the knot will fly back out and start feeding again. Very important, they've just come a long way, so they do need to refuel.
So they just commute between the Arctic and yep. Snettisham and yep. back again.
Yep, from breeding grounds to the wash at Snettisham and back again.
Snettisham isn't a stopping point for them to go on no. elsewhere.
A lot of them, the wash itself holds a very, very high percentage of the world population and the British wintering population of those birds. So it's vitally important.
And in the summer months, when would it be possible to see that?
Really, we have to wait until the birds start coming back after their breeding. So it's really from late July, August, then right through the winter, until January, February. Once really you reach the end of February, those birds, the adults, are starting to head back further north. So by March and April, there might only be a few thousand out there. Some of the birds may not go at all. Some of the non-breeding birds, maybe young bird from a previous year, mm-hmm. they're not going to go and breed. They may stay around. So not all of them go, but the majority.
But it seems that, certainly with geese, but I don't know about waders, but the family unit is really important to them.
Yes, it is in geese, not so much in waders. Mm-hmm. The geese tend to have a longer lifespan. Their parents take much, much greater care of the young for a longer period of time before they actually fledge. Waders, most wading species... really have quite a short sort of parenting point. Once waders actually hatch from the egg, a lot of them are up and around and running around feeding, a lot of them themselves, within a couple of hours.
Gosh.
So it's very different from maybe your blackbirds or your blue tits or your robins, that sort of garden breeding birds, where you've got maybe sort of 16 to 18 days of the adults feeding the birds in the nest. With waders, very, very different. As soon as the eggs hatch, they need those birds, and the youngsters are up and around. As soon as they are dry, up and around, and they're pecking for food themselves.
And can they fly immediately?
No, not at all. The birds, they're obviously very small. They have to wait, take in a lot of food for their feathers to develop and grow. So it's then going to be 4 weeks of the youngsters getting up to a stage of where their feathers grow enough for them to be able to fly.
Right.